Welcome to Anxious Like You, a podcast hosted by Micheline Maloof and Nadia Adesi, two therapists who are anxious like you. In each episode, Micheline and Nadia dive into their guests' experience with anxiety and give you the tools you need to face your anxiety head on. This podcast is made in collaboration with DiveThru, a mental wellness company.
Welcome back to Anxious Like You. On today's episode, we have Bobby Davis. Bobby Davis is a well-being practitioner for children and young people. She helps children and young people with mild to moderate anxiety and depression, and she coaches parents on how to help their children who have anxiety and depression.
Welcome back to Anxious Like You. Today, we're talking to Bobby Davis, and she is a fellow TikTok therapist. She talks often about anxiety and depression, and just her colorful, inspirational videos are so upbeat and exciting. So we can't wait to talk to her today, because she disclosed to us that she was super anxious to even come on our podcast because she struggles with anxiety herself. So we're going to talk a little bit about social anxiety on this episode, since Bobby struggles with it, I struggle with it, Nadia struggles with it. And before we started recording, we were all just like, we were just all so like, yes, me too. You know, talking about how we're all the same, but like in different countries. So let's dive in. Hi, Bobby.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Thank you for being here. Yeah. Can you tell our audience how long ago we invited you to come on our podcast and you were too anxious to come on?
Oh my gosh. I think I got the email like back in February or something like that. And it took me to maybe about a month ago to respond.
Wow. So is that the social anxiety?
100%. I think it's because you both have such like huge followings, and I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to it, and I'm just like, oh my God, the pressure.
Yeah.
But you have a huge following and you make videos daily and your videos are great. But
that's an edited version of me though. That's the difference.
Oh, yeah, we get it.
Yeah, I get that so much. Like the edited like TikTok videos, it's easy to like just cut, re-record, put the filters on, whatever. But yeah, with podcasting, I can say every single episode I come on to record, I still feel highly anxious, that my jaw hurts after I finish recording each time. Like every single time, doesn't fail.
I'm sitting here and like I'm experiencing all the classic symptoms of like fight or flight right now. Like heart's going, butterflies in my tummy, feeling sick, shaky.
Really?
And you feel this exact same way in social situations? Is this, you know, this is your social anxiety?
All the time. However, I do feel like it's worse in certain scenarios. So kind of like a professional scenario, 100 times worse, or like an academic scenario. But if I was kind of like, I feel okay to just go out and, you know, with my friends and family and things like that, but it definitely shows up in different places a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. What would you say the definition of social anxiety is for those that don't know what social anxiety is and like how it shows up?
I suppose for me, it's just kind of like being anxious around new people, talking in front of people, being the center of attention. Oh, it makes me feel sick.
Mm-hmm. When did you start experiencing your social anxiety or noticing it?
I love this question, because when I was growing up, I don't think I even realized that I had social anxiety. I always just put it down to like nervousness or shyness. And it's only really, I suppose there's been two times in my life where it's kind of drawn my attention to the fact that it could have been anxiety all the time. One was in one of my very first professional careers, where I had a complete and utter breakdown, really. I was having panic attacks every day going into work. And it resulted from, I went on a holiday, actually to Florida. And I felt so free. And I think I just felt so different when I was on holiday. And then when I went back to work, I was like, oh my God, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. And I was having panic attacks every day. And it was then really I went to the doctors and and we discussed anxiety, and I was like, oh my gosh, like this actually could be a thing. Like I never even thought about it before. Mm-hmm. And then the second time was when I started learning therapy, when I started training to become a therapist. And I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm recognizing all of this in myself. So
was that a good moment for you, or like a oh shit moment for you?
A bit of both, I think. Yeah. A little bit of both, because I think I finally felt understood on one hand, and I had an explanation for everything that I was feeling. But at the same time, it was like I almost felt the need to kind of deal with it. It's like, oh, I need to do something about this now. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's the thought that came to my head. Like once you determine what it is, it's like, oh shit, now I have to do something to help it, because now I know what I'm experiencing, which is hard. It's hard because I know a lot of the time with social anxiety, the treatment is putting yourself in social situations and becoming accustomed to it. And that anxious feeling is, did you start therapy, or did you start speaking to somebody about it, or is it something you worked on yourself?
So the first time that I mentioned when I had panic attacks and went through that time at work, I actually left my job in the end, because it kind of, I don't know, it just taught me that I need to, do what makes me happy. But at the time I did go to see a doctor, and he offered me either medication or therapy, and of course I went for the therapy first off. I was offered CBT, but I didn't really feel like it helped at the time. It didn't really have any effect on me at all. I think I maybe wasn't ready for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but looking back, I think I was just like dissociating the whole time, because like I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
I've never been back to therapy since.
Wow. Was it a bad experience, you think? Or
I wouldn't say it was a bad experience, but with a wellbeing practitioner role that I do, we get supervision. So we do it like, I know everybody gets supervision in a therapeutic role, but we have it really, really often. So we have it like whilst we were training, we had it once a week, and then now once you're qualified, you have it every other week. So that to me is my therapy, and honestly that has taught me so much more about myself than that initial experience with therapy. And I think it kind of just, to me it feels like therapy, because I can just talk about, you know, difficulties from the week, and it's almost like learning about clients helps me learn about myself.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
So you were diagnosed with just general anxiety, social anxiety, and were you ever diagnosed with panic disorder during that time of the panic attacks?
So I wasn't actually. And I think the reason for that is because diagnosis works slightly different here. Mm-hmm. So they don't often, if you go to therapy, they don't necessarily diagnose you. They just kind of work on what you want to work on. It's like goals based. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, if I'm right in thing, I'm not sure whether I'm right in this, but I'm thinking in the US it's kind of to do with insurance and stuff.
A lot of it does. Yeah, a lot of it does. And a lot of it also has to do with just the way our training is, like in terms of like how you develop treatment based on diagnosis. And so, it kind of has a little bit to do with both, but not always insurance. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is slightly different here. I don't think diagnosis is not like a huge thing here, unless you go for medication, which is what I opted not to do at the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at the DSM, I'd say I definitely had some element of panic disorder.
Yeah.
So you're experiencing social anxiety and you know what happens. Is that what made you want to get into this field, or were you in the field first and then?
Actually, no. Funnily enough, no. What made me want to get into this field was I was doing family support. So it's a little bit like like child protection type stuff. So I was helping sort of like what you could say disadvantaged families. And what I was finding a lot of the time was these families that I was working with, mental health was so prevalent. And I absolutely just loved working with the teenagers. And I saw a gap, because I feel like particularly in the UK, if there is any UK listeners, they will 100% you know, kind of relate to this. But I think in the UK, because of the NHS, there is huge waiting lists, and there is lots and lots of crisis management, but not a lot of the sort of early intervention, preventative type work. And so when I saw this role come up, which is, this is what I do, wellbeing practitioners in the UK work on sort of getting in there early and stopping things getting to crisis point and giving the skills, you know, kind of teaching people the skills that they need to be able to prevent themselves getting worse. There was a gap, there was definitely a gap. And so it just kind of aligned with me at the time. Yeah, it just felt like everything kind of came together. And it was that that inspired me to get into this line of work.
That's amazing. Do you feel like your social anxiety and your not your diagnosis, but like your experience with anxiety helps in the work that you do today?
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, obviously it's some element of self-disclosure can be comforting to your clients, I think. And if they know that their therapist also struggles, sometimes it can be kind of like light bulb moment for people. They can be like, oh, right, okay, so I'm not totally weird. Like, therapists struggle with this too. Yeah. So I think sometimes it makes you a little bit more relatable, but I also think that sometimes you can make it quite fun with clients, because sometimes I'll challenge them to something like a behavioral experiment, like, I don't know, go out in something you wouldn't normally wear. And then you can challenge me and I'll do something. Yeah. So like we kind of challenge each other and bounce off each other in that way.
I love that. I love this like new idea of like therapy not being this like stoic therapist that's just like sitting like, yeah, how does that make you feel? I love that like you're creating like fun stuff and having your clients almost just, you know, join in and feel it's so relatable, and it just makes it easier. I know we've heard many times, we've talked about this in the past on our podcast about certain people thinking that because you have anxiety and you still have anxiety that you must not be such a good therapist, because like, why can't you cure your own anxiety then? And so what do you say to that? Like, what is your response to people who say things like that?
My response is always the same. And I think Nadia, you did a similar video on TikTok for this, but I would say, would you expect like a heart doctor, a cardiologist, I think that's what heart doctors are called. Would you expect a cardiologist not to get, you know, like sick with a heart problem? Yeah. Would you, you know, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, it does feel like it, do you know what I'm saying?
You're human. Like, yeah, these things.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't expect the doctor to never get sick.
Yeah, yeah. And I've learned coping skills to manage my own social anxiety as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's different for everybody. Yeah.
So more specifically to your social anxiety, because you mentioned that your heart beats really fast, and I think you said a few other physical symptoms, but what are the exact symptoms you experience?
As in physical experience, physical yes. symptoms?
Yes.
So often I get the like sick kind of feeling, like butterflies in my tummy's turning, heart beating really fast, shaking. Sometimes I like get a really dry throat and a dry mouth. And sometimes I kind of like stutter over my words and things like that. I'll like swallow at the wrong time because I'm like, oh my God, my mouth is so dry. It just feels like my body malfunctions basically, left, right and center. I start yawning.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a yawning thing. For me.
Huge. And I think I said this in another episode. I didn't realize that it was part of my anxiety until I spoke to Desta, another TikTok therapist, my destination. Yeah. We're on FaceTime one night and I was like, I can't stop yawning. And she's like, that's an anxiety symptom. Like, maybe you're experiencing anxiety trying to kind of catch your breath. And I'm like, yep. And I've been doing that my whole life.
Yawning. Just learning about this right now. Like, this is a moment where I'm just learning that yawning.
I was mind blown. I'm like, oh my God, you just solved such
that
a big
makes
thing.
So much sense.
Yeah. And sometimes when I'm anxious in like an interview or something serious, I'm like, don't yawn, don't yawn. Don't make them know that. I like, don't make it seem like I'm tired, because I'm not tired.
I'm wondering if that's part of like our shutdown freeze response of like everything is slowing down and we feel like there's no escape. So like now, like there's reduced oxygen or something. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up as I talk, but I'm wondering if that's what that has to do with it.
For me, I can't get a breath through. So yawning makes me like have that chance. So I'll like yawn to see if it'll come through, so I won't freak myself out that I'm having like an anxiety or a panic or an asthma attack, whatever it is in that moment or whatever I think it is. Yeah, so I'm like, okay,
there's been many a time where I've sat in an interview and just been like holding back a yawn, you know, when you make that stupid face.
It's like impossible to hold in and your nostrils just flare and you're like,
that's exactly the one, funny, but that's another one, who knew.
We can laugh about it, but it's like so painful in the moment, like, you know, like all of these physical symptoms. Do you ever get like that closing up of your throat, like you can't swallow?
Sometimes not often though.
What about like thought symptoms? Like, I know the physical symptoms, you know, that we just describe, but like what thought processes go through your mind when you're in a situation where your social anxiety is coming up? And I'm stuttering because my social anxiety is coming up right now. So so when you're in a situation where that's happening, what thoughts go through your mind, or how does that change for you?
I think it's all about being good enough for me. Like, I'm always thinking, if I stutter, that means people might think I'm stupid or I'm unintelligent. Or if I make a mistake, that people are going to think bad of me, or like I'm less than, or I'm just not good enough, or I don't know, like I'm not educated enough, or I don't know. It's just, I think I have huge imposter syndrome, and that's part of it for me.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners what that means? Like, what is imposter syndrome, and how is it really related to that social anxiety?
I'm laughing because I always say that imposter syndrome is that kind of sensation, that feeling of like, who am I? Who am I to be speaking about this? Who am I to be on this podcast with you two right now? Mm-hmm. Who am I to be talking to you about anxiety when I struggle with anxiety myself? Mm-hmm. You know, just not, almost just not feeling good enough.
Feeling like you're just like pretending and people are going to find you out. Like, if they only knew the truth, like, then you would be kicked off your, you know, all your followers would go away. Nobody would want to listen to you ever again because they've just found out that you're an imposter, right? Like, you're not supposed to be where you are.
And then all of my achievements are kind of like just flukes.
Yeah.
It's not from the effort and the numerous hours of work that I've put in. It's just a fluke.
So what comes first, the imposter syndrome or the social anxiety?
You know, I really don't know. I think probably the imposter syndrome. Because I think it's the way I think about myself and my perception of myself, maybe, that causes me to be that way in groups of people.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that people often see me and don't associate social anxiety with me. Like, if I tell people I struggle with social anxiety, their reaction is normally, really? Mm-hmm. You seem so confident though, and like outgoing and bubbly, and I'm like, yeah, it's all the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really funny though. I think about like all of the therapists I have met through social media platforms struggle with some sort of anxiety, and we've all been very clear and open about that. And it's really funny because all of us have pretty large followings and we're putting ourselves out there every single day. And yet this is something we deal with every single day. I just wonder how or why, like, what do we, you know, maybe we've just like,
what do we have in common?
Yeah, like, what is this? Somebody want to study us out there, please let us know. We will be part of your study.
But please tell us why we are this way.
I wonder if it's like, you know, makes us, well, first of all, we talked earlier about like when we're posting stuff on TikTok or, you know, we can edit it and make it look like we want it to look before it's posted. So like if we say a word in a way we don't like, or, you know, so it's maybe a little bit different because we have the final say of what goes out there. Whereas when we're in a social situation, like you're in a podcast right now and, you know, you don't have full control over that situation, or maybe you're at a party or with friends or at school and things can't be edited. And if you already feel like you're an imposter, then, you know, now people are really going to find you out, because that's the thing with imposter syndrome. It's like being found out.
Yeah.
Mm. So. Yeah. And I also feel like I have to think about every little thing that I say. Mm-hmm. And I can't, if I say something wrong, I can't go back on that, even though I probably could, because I could say, hang on a minute, let me just rethink that and rephrase that. But it's so hard, isn't it? When you've got social anxiety, you just think, oh, I've said that now. And I'm so rubbish. Everything about me is so bad because I've said that thing wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it makes everything worse. You can't make a mistake if you have social anxiety, because then your anxiety is 100 times worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm already, when you ask me about how it shows up for me, I am already thinking about the things that I've said earlier on in this podcast and thinking, oh gosh, like, have I said something? Maybe I should have said something different, or it should have gone a different way, you know.
I can be honest, like even as I'm talking to you, I do the same thing. Like every single time, like even now after, you know, I said what I just said about imposter syndrome, I'm like, should I have said it that way? Like it's hard to be present sometimes because you're overthinking what you said or what you're going to say or how you're going to say it, or how your voice sounds, what you look like. There's a camera recording us while we're talking. Am I looking at you? Am I looking at the camera? Like, it's just like so much. I can't even, because I'm like,
when you think about it, it makes it worse.
It's so much analysis happening. And I think because we're talking about social anxiety, mine's like up on the surface right now.
Oh, I'm sweating.
Yeah, I'm sweating too.
Palms are sweating.
That's one thing that happens to me, cold sweats. Yeah.
It's funny because like when we talk to other guests and it's not about social anxiety, I can assume that like therapist rule sometimes and just like put it on the back burner. Yeah. But now that it's front and center and we're talking about it, I'm finding it so much more difficult to even get my words out. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, this is a live recording of three therapists with social anxiety trying to work through it, figure it out, and keep going.
What is a story can you share a story with us, like in a situation where you were like super socially anxious and like something happened, like you felt embarrassed or you felt like, I don't know, you had to go home. I don't know. Do you have a story like that to share?
It's so funny because when you say that, like, nothing really sticks, because it's like always there. There isn't like a significant event that like sticks in my head. All I think about when I look back is presentations. For me, presentations are a huge, huge trigger. So if I, like, every time I've studied in university and I've seen, you know, in the like, when they outline at the beginning of the course all the modules that you've got to do and the assessments and things, presentation, I'm like, no, could we just go through one module without a presentation, please?
But you showed up and did them anyways.
Yeah, I do. And that's the hard thing as well, is I guess that is one thing about me, is that even though I've always struggled with social anxiety, it's kind of subconsciously, even before I knew about avoidance, you know, being a therapist and things, and sort of knowing how the treatment looks for social anxiety, even before that, I did always fight it. So I've always tried to go out of my way to like answer questions in lectures and things like that if I know the answer. Just because, I don't know, maybe I just, some part of me knew that it would get worse if I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So with presentations,
Like you were afraid they would call on you if you didn't answer the questions you knew, so they might call on you to the questions you don't know. Is that what you're saying?
There's also that. Well, yeah, that's also a thing, right? Because if you don't answer the questions, they're more likely to pick on you.
No, I remember being in classrooms like that. Like they, like I'm like, okay, I know this one. I have to answer this one because the next one I might not know. So
to share that this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. And as an Anxious Like You listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/likeyou. As a therapist who struggles with anxiety, I know how important it is to go to therapy. I've been going to therapy for a long time. Even as a therapist, my personal healing work does not stop. BetterHelp makes going to therapy easy with its fully online services. You can chat with a therapist through video, phone, or text. You can schedule your sessions when they're convenient for you. And I love that they offer phone and chat options because let's face it, sometimes even talking is too overwhelming. And having the text option with your therapist can make the difference between attending or missing session. Therapy is more than just a place to talk and vent. It's a place where you get to gain insight into your challenges, develop skills to help you manage symptoms, and do the deeper work to help you process past hurts and live a more fulfilling life. So if you're still on the fence about starting therapy or not, take advantage of this 10% off and check them out at betterhelp.com/likeyou.
This is one thing that a lot of people will relate to. So if you do like a training session or you're in a classroom scenario, and they say, let's go around the room, or a meeting, let's go around the room and introduce yourself. Just no, I don't want to do that. Just skip over me.
You're thinking in your head what you're going to say. Yeah. I always do that. Like, my name is Nadia. I am from Toronto. You know, you just like go through exactly. And you black out as you say.
Especially
it.
If they like ask for like a fun fact or something. I'm like, at that point, there's nothing interesting about me. I'm like, I have no
I don't remember anything about me. I don't know my name. I don't know what I do.
There was one time we were playing this game where, I don't know if you guys have played it. It's like this picnic game where you get to know each other. It was like an icebreaker activity where everybody has to figure out like what we're bringing to this picnic. And at the end of the game, you realize that the only items you can bring to the picnic are what start with the letter of your first name, but nobody tells you that at the beginning. So like, I would be saying like apple and they're like, no, you can't bring an apple. And I'm like, why can Amanda bring an apple? Why can't I bring an apple? And like, it was really hard, but that type of shit would make me so fucking anxious until like I would figure it out. Because like, I remember like it was a large group and people are going and some people are getting it right. And I'm like, I'm about to have a panic attack, like not knowing what the heck they're gonna, like, I hate icebreakers for that reason.
Because you don't know, like, if you're going to be the last person. I mean, what's so bad about being the last person anyway, right? But you, God forbid if you're that last person, because you're telling yourself that you're, you know, everyone else is really smart and you're dumb, you know? That's what's going through your head.
But does anyone genuinely like those? If you like icebreakers, can you send us a DM and just tell us about yourself a little bit? Because I'm so curious if there's anyone out there that enjoy, like, gets excited for them.
I'm sure I like them when there's people I know. Like, I like them when they're like at my old job, I knew all of everyone that worked there, but they would like to start each meeting with an icebreaker just because people come to meetings really pissed off anyway. So in that case, I'm like, I love icebreakers, we get to play. But like, if it's like a brand new like group of people, I'm like, fuck no.
And can I also add that they don't even work? Anyone who plans icebreakers, anyone who plans like, you know, who does these things in classroom scenarios, they don't work, because when everyone's introducing themselves, I completely miss what they say because I'm thinking about what I'm going to say. So I don't know who these people are before I've gone, but everyone after me, I know because I've done my bit and I can relax again.
Yeah. How about when like the person right before you says the same fun fact as you and you're like, oh my God, I need to think of a quick fun fact because I don't want to seem like I'm copying.
I'm getting flashbacks. That is so the worst.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, that is one of the things that shows up for me with my social anxiety, is like my mind just going completely blank.
Mm-hmm.
Or the complete opposite, and I just completely go off topic on a big old ramble that nobody, you know, just mm-hmm. completely off on a tangent.
That's me.
Yeah.
You guys have to like constantly like stop me from talking sometimes
because no,
I ramble when
I. That's your imposter syndrome. No, you don't. You're good.
But, I don't think I've ever heard you ramble once.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because every time I hear, I listen to our podcast, I'm like, Micheline, just shut up. Like,
you're so good.
My imposter syndrome, thinking like I'm the worst like podcast host ever, like that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I know there was three episodes where I spoke of like the cycle of abuse, and I was like so hard on myself the third time. I was like, you stupid, oh, like you mentioned it in the last two episodes, like why did you have to bring it up here too? So like it's hard, because maybe other people, and that's the thing with like social anxiety, it's like other people may not think what you're thinking, and that's like the spotlight effect, where you think
mm-hmm.
like everyone's eyes are on you and everyone is thinking of what you're saying or doing or wearing, or you know, how you're breathing, or you know, and really everyone's just like really focused on themselves, and they're less likely to be focused on you. But that's what shows up with social anxiety.
Yeah, definitely, because I also think that, you know, with things like embarrassing moments, you're the only person literally who's going to remember your embarrassing moments. But if you ask other, like, can you remember anybody else's embarrassing moments from life?
No.
I don't think I can remember one embarrassing moment from anyone else, but I can remember loads of my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, true. And it's always like silly things that aren't embarrassing, you know, that shouldn't be embarrassing, but actually it's the way it feels is just awful at the time.
You have ever like those cringe moments? The cringe moments are like, I know there was a while where we had like the TikTok video trend of like going to that song where like ting ting, and people were like making their faces like kind of go like ugh, ugh, like cringe faces.
Mm-hmm.
You guys actually do that? Because I actually do that. Like I actually cringe that way in real life
all the time, and I need to say like stop thinking about that. Get it out right now.
You know what I say? I scream Norman's name. I'm like, Norman. The weirdest thing. Like when I realized doing it the other day, because I was doing the dishes and I go, Norman, and Gabriel's like, what? And I'm like, I don't know, like I just thought of a cringe moment and I just like said Norman.
Why does our brain do this to us?
Oh,
why brain, why?
That's terrible.
Oh my goodness,
what have you found that's like helped your social anxiety?
So, like I mentioned before, one of the things that shows up for me is like a blank mind completely and utterly, just cannot think of something to say. So what I often do in conversations, or used to do a lot, is I would be so focused on how I would respond and the things that I could say in response to somebody, I would just completely miss what the other person had said, which then made things even worse, because how can you respond to somebody if you've no idea what they've just said? So one thing that I do is try to really focus on the speech that the person's using, the way the mouth moves when they say the words that they're saying, the tone of voice, mm-hmm. And just try to focus my attention more on the other person who's talking, because that way I can be more present in the conversation. And that really works for me in a social scenario when I'm, you know, in mid conversation with somebody.
To me.
Yeah. Still struggle with things like being center of attention, like in meetings and things like that, where, you know, some people look at me for an answer and then it's like, oh, now I have to say something and I don't know what I'm supposed to say. But I guess just like taking a breath and slowing down, rather than going, I need to answer like straight away, oh my God, I need to get something out. Just taking a breath and just formulating my answer before I say it, and just really slowing it down helps sometimes. Not all the time.
So do you actually like practice slowing down your speech and taking a step back to respond instead of rambling? How many do you know, like, did anyone tell you? Because I know somebody once told me take 3 seconds before you speak, and the other people don't notice that you're taking that 3 second pause. It will feel like an eternity to you, but it also the other person won't notice. Is that something that you do, or was that like did somebody tell you, or was that something naturally that you picked up on?
To be honest, I think it was something that I naturally picked up on, because it was just something that I noticed about myself, that I would always put pressure on myself to like answer as soon, like just kind of come across like I knew the answer straight away. We don't always know the answer straight away. Sometimes we need to think about the question that's asked to us. So it was just something that I noticed about myself that I was doing. And like with the rambling thing, actually, a funny story has just come to me now we're talking about this. When I first met my fiance's family, because I went in that house, I was so nervous. Oh my gosh, I was so nervous. I walked in that house and I was asked one question. I think it was something like, how's your dad? I think my dad was poorly at the time or something. How's your dad? And honestly, I must have talked for about half an hour about just things that weren't even relevant. I can't even remember. I just remember being like, mah, 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 and then mah, 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 happened, and this happened, and then that happened. And I remember looking at her face and she was just kind of like, stop. Calm down. And it was that actually, I think, that made me go, maybe I need to think about this a little. Maybe this is a thing for me. I need to slow down.
I feel like I have stories that can relate to that too. And when you're in it, you notice you're in it, but you can't stop.
I knew I was doing it, but I was like, where do I stop with this now? I've gone into this massive story about something and I've got to finish the story. And you know, we still laugh about it to this day.
Good.
It's still a laughing place.
It's friendly.
It wasn't funny at the time.
One time I have like a similar story with that, like not like that at all with like my fiance, but like a while ago I was working somewhere else, not a therapist yet. There was this like really hot guy at work. That like every girl, like he was just beautiful and nice. Like he was just like the nicest, sweetest, didn't know he was hot guy. Okay. And he was like the sweetest guy. And I remember going into his office because he was training me for something because I was new. And he goes, man, you look so much like my wife. And I went on a ramble. Like instead of just being like, oh, like what does your wife look like or whatever, like just random, like, oh cool, you know, is she Middle Eastern or I don't know, like stupid talk. I was just like, oh my gosh, really, like does she have curly hair like me, but look, I have a bump on my nose, and like I would not stop for like 5 minutes, to the point where he was just like okay, never mind. And I was like so fucking embarrassed, and like that was like he was training me, and like the rest of the time I was like, I told all my friends that worked there, I was like, what the fuck, like first of all, why did he say that to me, because that's fucked up, because like he's hot, and then secondly, like I just like totally like duh.
Oh my gosh,
so embarrassing. I hate those moments of rambling things where you just like don't stop yourself from talking.
But it's so funny because you know that you're in it. When you're doing it, you're like, why am I doing this?
And you can't like get the like, words stop, back. You're like, stop, 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 stop.
It's
stop,
like you're just stop. Digging yourself into a hole. Just dig. Carry on digging.
Exactly. Just dig deep. Oh my gosh, so embarrassing. So embarrassing. But I love the tips that you're giving. Like, you know, watch the other person. I know that, you know, with social anxiety, it's like the focus is on ourselves a lot and what people think of us and the spotlight effect. So turning that focus to another person, what they look like, how their lips are moving, their body language, their clothing, just kind of giving them the full attention might help. And then the pause, if you're a rambler, also helps. I've been practicing a little bit, but so. That's good.
How would you say you prepare yourself for when you know you're going to be the center of attention? Do you kind of hype yourself up, remind yourself that when it comes to you, you're going to take a break and take 3 seconds before you respond?
I try to ground myself beforehand and just distract. So I will do everything I can to like not think about it beforehand. Everybody knows that doesn't always work. But yeah, I mean, I just try to put it out of my mind as much as I can until the actual moment, because I know that actually sometimes, even though you do feel anxious when you're in it, sometimes the worst part is the build up to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you can kind of ground yourself and use all the kind of coping skills, you know, distraction and beforehand, then sometimes that helps when you're actually in it, because you've not hyped it up so much then.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Anticipatory anxiety often is like worse than the actual
event.
Yeah, that's so coming
true. Out. Yeah. Because you know, if I'm honest, like right now talking to you, I'm really enjoying it because, you know, we're friends, like this is something I'm passionate about, I like talking about it, but at the same time, like all day today has probably been the worst that I've, you know, up until now. Like I feel fine now, but
yeah,
earlier today, yeah, it's the anticipation that's worse. So
do you find after the actual anticipated event that causes you anxiety takes place, you are exhausted?
Oh, so much so.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think that's common with social anxiety. You hype it up so much, you're so anxious, and then you actually do the thing. And then after that, you're so relieved that it's over with, but then you are so tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It took everything out of you.
Yeah,
it's so funny because I think not only do you have the physical symptoms during or just before, like we've mentioned already, but you also have, I mean, I think this happens to a lot of people, kind of secondary physical symptoms. So I know you guys have spoken about like gastro issues, mm-hmm. to put it nicely.
Yeah.
But for me, I get like sore throats, headaches afterwards, or like mouth ulcers as well, which mm-hmm. is really gross, probably TMI. But, mm-hmm. you know, I reckon it happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I really do, you know.
So I get mouth ulcers too.
So do I. I was just going to say that I relate to so many things that you're saying and so many of your physical symptoms as well. Yeah,
I always know when I've been through a stressful period or something really anxiety provoking for me, because a couple of weeks later, I always get mouth ulcers or sore throat.
Yeah.
Yep. That is so painful too. It's like, you know, you start to think that something is wrong with you, can like go into like health anxiety too with like all of that, because of right, because you had so much stress on your body that your body's like constantly in fight or flight, and yeah, it's horrible.
I have a sister that doesn't help with my health anxiety, because my sister has major issues with health anxiety. So
yeah,
if I have something wrong with me, I'm like, don't call my sister, don't call Donna, because she will just make it 10 times worse for me.
Yeah. Also interesting that you said the cold sore thing, or I don't know, I consider them cold sores. I don't know if yours are cold sores or canker sores, sorry, because they're in my mouth. I don't know if you guys get them in or around.
The inside of the bottom lip, on my cheeks, mm-hmm. on the side.
Yeah.
I start biting my cheek more often when I'm eating. Yeah. And
me too. Yeah. And I'm like, time to call the dentist.
Yeah.
They're going to do
go and there's nothing. One time, my whole gum swole up. Like all of my gums on this side swole up to the point where like I couldn't even close. I went to the dentist and I'm like, I'm sure I have like 25 cavities or something. And he was like, no, there's nothing. And then I had all these ulcers. He had to give me something called like magic potion or something, where you just like swish it around in your mouth. And it has like this like stomach acid medication, but you don't actually like swallow it. You just like squish it around in your mouth and spit it out. But that helped a lot, but that was all because of stress and anxiety. And I lost,
that's good to know.
Yeah. I lost hair. I was like losing chunks of hair. I had bald spots in the back, and I have a lot of hair. So like for me to have like bald spots, it's pretty bad. That's how bad like anxiety can affect us.
Doesn't it just highlight though how closely linked mental health and physical health are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And one thing that I definitely want to talk about before we end the podcast is like the role of avoidance and social anxiety, because obviously like we feel so scared to give that presentation, to come on that podcast, to, you know, go to that party, talk to that friend, whatever. And so we avoid it, which gives us that like short-term anxiety relief. Well, now it's out of the way and now I don't have to worry about it. Therefore my anxiety is better temporarily though, right? Because then the moment that another situation presents itself, now your anxiety has increased because you don't have that like reinforcement of a positive experience, or just like constant avoidance, which makes it worse. So
This is what we mean when we say avoidance fuels anxiety. It's almost an enabler when you just avoid all these situations to temporarily make your anxiety go away. It's not really helping anything. Obviously, it's the easy way out and seems like the best solution in that moment because it's just going to make everything better. Talking about presentations, I left the class right before I did a presentation once and I was like, nah, I'll take the zero. I'm not doing this. But I had to present. Like I had to present the next week. And then it was embarrassing because I was in class and then left the class and had to go back. So anyways, it just makes the anxiety worse. So avoidance in terms of actually avoiding the event is not going to help. In terms of what Bobby was saying about like distracting yourself beforehand and not trying to hype it up too much, that's a great coping strategy. Yeah. That's like trying to shift your perspective a little bit. So there's nothing wrong with that, but actually not taking play, like actually not doing the thing that makes you anxious is going to make you more anxious.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the things of the pandemic as well that's made it so difficult for people with social anxiety because it's almost forced us into avoidance.
Yeah.
And so coming out of lockdown and, you know, having to see people again and feeling that pressure again, it's almost heightened. And I know I'm feeling it, so I'm sure other people are feeling it as well. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I'm talking about quite a lot at the moment because I think it's just so prevalent right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've all been avoiding for such a long time that it is like it was like a social anxiety person's like paradise for a while because you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go to that party. You don't have to decline invitations. You know, that's so difficult. Having to decline or cancel at the last minute, which all went away for the most part in 2020. But now that it's coming back, you know, finding a way to work through that is really helpful. That's what we do with clients that have social anxiety. We put them in those situations slowly, graded, right? Graded exposure, like slowly getting them to go to the supermarket and ask for where the spices are or, you know, just like even like put your credit card fully in your wallet and zip it up before running out of the stores because you're not bothering the person behind you just because you're putting your wallet away. And it's like those types of experiences. It sounds silly, but it's really a lot of the work is really putting yourself in those situations, not quitting a class or, you know, calling out sick to work because you have a presentation that you can't avoid anyway because you're gonna have to do it, like you're gonna have to do it in the future.
I mean there's definitely been meetings at work that I have avoided 100%. I'll admit that, but it's just difficult, isn't it? And I guess that's why I say that I always tried my best when I was going through, you know, university and college and all of that kind of stuff. I always tried my best to answer questions that I knew the answer to, because that for me felt a little bit less anxiety provoking than answering a question that I either wasn't sure on or, you know, the dreaded being picked on situation. So I would rather have done that. And I thought by doing more of that, I was helping my anxiety to get a little bit better. And I would say that I have kind of, even though I've struggled with it a lot, I have kind of kept on top of it to a level where it's not become too big of an issue. And it's not, you know, it's not controlled my life. So it is such an important aspect of it, isn't it? Avoidance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What last words of wisdom or tips or advice do you have for our listeners who are struggling or might be struggling, think they might be struggling with social anxiety?
I would say that you don't know your own strength. I think people don't realize how strong they are, and I think people second guess themselves all the time. So I think that people should be, you know, your positive affirmations and working on loving yourself, because I think that's a huge part of it, isn't it?
That's great advice. Yeah. I love that. You don't know your own strength. You don't know what you're, you know, capable of overcoming as well. So thank you, Bobby. It has been like such a pleasure chatting with you about this topic. I am so glad you faced your social anxiety fears today and decided to hop on to our podcast. I hope that that makes you feel a little bit better for the next podcast you get invited to.
It definitely does. But I think it did help that you two are like wonderful hosts. So,
oh, thank you.
Thank you.
We're all socially anxious hosts.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. Join the Anxious Like You community by following @AnxiousLikeYou on Instagram. See you in the next episode.